Thank you for coming.
When did you warm this up?
Oh, 7:30.
Okay. Hi, I'm Aaron. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi,
my sobriety date is March 23rd, 2003. Midtown is my home group. My sponsor is there tonight. And I have the privilege of sponsoring men and women in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be late. I really didn't. I thought I was supposed to be here at 6:30. Right? And not because of anything you said to me. It was just I thought. Right? And that's where all the problems start. Right? Because before I ever took a drink, I thought, right? And while I know we've got an example in our book, I think his name is Fred. Fred is the man who has normal in every respect, except for his relationship with alcohol. That is not my experience. I have been not right for as long as I can remember. And it started with I thought. And really, all I thought about was me. You know, all I thought about was me. I thought about you, but only as it related to me, what I could get from you, what you could do for me, how I could make you think what I wanted you to think and treat me the way I wanted you to treat me. And this is all before I ever took a drink, right? My selfishness was in full force. Now, fortunately for me, I did one day take a drink. It was not my very first drink. My very first drink, I was probably 6, 7, 8, 9, you know, family functions, funerals, weddings, something like that, and getting a little sip of this, a little sip of that. It didn't do anything for me. I didn't think anything of it. It really didn't cross my mind. But this one time, I got drunk. I was 12 or 13. A girl invited me back to her house after school. It was a very exciting moment, and she brought out a bottle of Manischewitz wine, and we drank the whole bottle. I think I had most of it, but I had that day what was probably my first spiritual experience. The world's colors seemed to brighten. The breeze in the trees was especially cooling. The pastel yarmulkes on her stuffed animals were just very warm and inviting. You know what I mean? It was a magic moment for me. And I tell you, I'm 46. I'm gonna be 47 years old this year. And I can remember that moment like it was yesterday. It was a great discovery in my life. Now, if that's the only thing that happened, you'd have a different speaker tonight, obviously. Because if every time I took a drink of alcohol, things were magical, I wouldn't be here, right? But here's the problem. I keep drinking, and eventually I want to drink more, right? And I have to sacrifice things. Really, I sacrificed everything. But at some point, school started to get in the way of drinking. I wanted to drink more, so I stopped going to school. Family trips got in the way of drinking, so I stopped going on family trips. Family started to get in the way of drinking, so I stopped spending time with my family. You know, and as a teenager, I found myself spending most of my time on the street, doing what teenagers can do to get money to drink, right? I very quickly sought lower companions. And the truth is, things weren't magical anymore. Things were dirty. Things were black. Things were empty. There was a lot of hate. I reviled myself. I couldn't live the way I was living. And I continued to live the way that I was living, right? So maybe if I could be drunk 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you'd have a different speaker. But I can't. And those moments of sobriety as painful as they were when I was a child before I ever drank, those moments of sobriety became infinitely more painful. And the need to drink, right? To drown the guilt of my passions and to make more passions possible was a regular part of my life. And I knew that there was something wrong. I knew that there was something wrong. I don't want my life to go in this direction. I want my life to go in a different direction, you know? I could see that. It's not hard. I was homeless. I was a teenager. I was homeless. I was selling myself to people to get alcohol and to get drugs and doing whatever I could to find a place to sleep. And I didn't want it, right? So you go back home and you try and get cleaned up. You know what I mean? You go back to mom and dad like every tough guy does, right? Back to mom and dad and try and do something. Try and do something different. I'm going to do something different. It's going to be different. I'm going to do something different. I go home and I'm different for a few days or a few weeks and I start drinking a little bit because I'm really uncomfortable when I don't drink. I'm really, really uncomfortable when I don't drink. I get in retrospect, the book describes it very well. I get restless, irritable, and discontent. I don't know that there are better words. So I drink because there's relief there, right? Even just thinking that I'm about to get a drink, there's some relief in that, you know? And I was talking about this with my friend Kelly on the way down. You know, if I have one or two, I can stop. And so for a few days, I'll have one or two. And that'll be enough. But then one day, it's not enough, right? Maybe it's been a week, I've been drinking one or two, and it's not enough anymore. And so I have three. I'm just going to have a third one. It'll be fine. And I don't know what the magic thing is about three. But as soon as I take three, all bets are off, right? I end up, I guess, experiencing what the doctor's opinion talks about. I end up experiencing the phenomenon of craving. But I don't even know that I'm having it. It's not like any other craving I've ever had in my life. I mean, I smoke. I am addicted to cigarettes. I have tried to quit smoking on several occasions. I am familiar with that feeling of craving. And to me, with alcohol, it's never felt like that. It's never even felt like a choice. I didn't even know it was happening. I am somewhere into my third drink, and then I'm somewhere into next week, right? I'm a blackout drinker. I like time traveling. It's exciting. But that's what happens. And I didn't make a decision to do that. I there were certainly plenty of times where I made a decision to get good and drunk and tie one on. But more often than not, I just start drinking to take the edge off. And somewhere right about the time that the edge comes off, I lose all ability to stop drinking, right? And so because of that, right, I am alcoholic. See, in the doctor's opinion, it says this thing, and this is a doctor who worked with drinkers, a doctor who worked with drug addicts, a doctor who worked with problem people, right? He says that experience where you go and you're just drinking and then all of a sudden you're way drunk and you don't even know how you got there doesn't happen to anybody except alcoholics. It doesn't happen to anybody else. So if you've had that experience, you're probably alcoholic. The other part of this that's true for me is that, you know, when I tell you I'm alcoholic, what I'm telling you is that I'm going to drink again. I'm going to drink again. Maybe not tonight. Maybe not tomorrow. But sometime, and soon, if I'm left to my own devices, I will be drunk. There's no way around it. I have tried religions, education, self-knowledge, geographical cures, relationship cures, If I get the right woman, I'll be able to stop drinking. If I get the right set of kids, I'll be able to stop drinking. I get the right job. I have tried. And I'm not stupid, right? I mean, I'm really not stupid. I can apply a set of ideas to my life, right? I can understand things. I can conceptualize things. I can see how things ought to be. But when it comes to drinking, I can't. The description in the book of that mental defense that stops us from putting our hand on a hot stove, right? That is absolutely absent in me. And it was not just absent in me 14 years ago. That is absent in me today, right? If I really try and focus in, just laser down on how alcohol is bad for me, I can't do it. It kind of moves off to the side where I can't see it and just stands over here in the edge of my vision. And for that reason, I am an alcoholic, right? And that's all that's required, right? I mean, if you've got that stuff going on in your life, you're pretty much done. Pack it in. Come to AA and do what we do here. Because in my experience, what's in the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and I know what Billy and Sam practice as Alcoholics Anonymous, has become a solution for my life, right? A life that was a problem from jump, right? I mean, I really don't remember a time when my life wasn't a problem. Until I was here, and not just here, but here doing this, right? With everything. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time in 1987. If you recall, that is not my sobriety day. I spent 16 years in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous because I'm a person who believes in half measures. Really. They say it in here, it's a drastic program, right? The ideas and the attitudes that we have to adopt to be able to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous and actually practice Alcoholics Anonymous as a way of life are drastic. They're severe. And when I was 17, 18 years old trying to get sober for the first time, things were just not that bad. They just weren't. I could get behind the idea that I had a problem with drinking, you know, but look, your inventory stuff is really cute. Thank you so much. I am certain that for you, lesser beings, you need to do that and share it with someone else. But me, I have a deep insight, understanding, and knowledge of myself. And quite frankly, I'm smarter than you are. So I'm going to work this out on my own, but I do appreciate you sharing your information with me. Thank you very much. I felt the same way about your God, perhaps even worse. I felt the same way about your amends. I particularly felt this way about self-sacrifice. Self-sacrifice is for religious people. Self-sacrifice is for martyrs. I am interested in getting everything I can out of life. I'm going to grab it all, have it all. I want it all. You know, and I think that's why, you know, I think that's why it doesn't matter where we come from. It doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor. It doesn't matter whether you went to college or you dropped out of school. It doesn't matter whether you went to jail or you really just puked on the rug a couple of times. It doesn't really matter. See, whatever I have is not enough, you know. And so while our experiences of social consequences coming into Alcoholics Anonymous may be different, the unmanageability is always the same, right? The unmanageability is the same because I am insatiable. And that's what drives me to be in conflict with everybody all the time, right? So I brought my insatiability to Alcoholics Anonymous and I didn't do anything about it. I came in here and I watched you, right? And I listened to you, and I learned how to talk like you. and I learned how to look like you. And put together 3.5 years at one point. That was pretty good. Yeah, not working any steps, let's be clear. 3.5 years, no steps. That is pretty good. But, I mean, you know how it goes, right? If you're alcoholic, if you have what we have, there's only one solution, right? I mean, you got to abandon yourself to God. And I was never willing to do that. I was never willing to surrender. I was never willing to submit to a sponsor. I certainly was not going to take direction from anybody. You don't know me, right? And so I continued to suffer for a very long time. It wasn't until I was several years sober that somebody actually said, well, what the hell is a half measure? What does that mean? So we looked it up. And a half measure, I'm sure somebody here has already looked it up, but I'm going to tell you anyway. Half measure is anything less than what's required. That's a half measure. It's not 50%. You can't do 51% and go, well, I'm not half measuring it. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right? That doesn't work. Anything less than what's required. And in my experience, the only thing that's been required here for me is everything. Right? Everything. Not perfection. Not perfection. But everything. I have to bring everything that I have today to Alcoholics Anonymous if I want to stay sober. Good, bad, or indifferent, right? The seventh step prayer does not say, now I am willing for you to have all of me good, right? This is good and bad. That there's an implication there that there is bad in all of us because we all use the same prayer. There's bad in all of us. And so if I bring everything that I have, it seems to work. And when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous this time, most of what I had was a bad attitude, right? But I had found sufficient reason to want to stop drinking again. I had a child. And I told you a little bit about what I was like when I was a kid. I was really uncomfortable. I thought a lot, all that happy stuff. But I also really didn't have any feelings for anybody else. I really didn't care about anybody. Nobody really mattered to me. Probably because I was busy thinking about me all the time. So I don't have no time for you. No room for you. I had no actual awareness that you could have feelings like I had feelings until after I was several years sober. It just never registered. It wasn't like I was ever doing anything to hurt you because you were a cardboard cutout and a bit player in my movie. You weren't even real, you know? Well, I don't remember where I was going with that. I'm sure it was very good, but I lost it. So I was getting sober, right? Okay. So I brought my bad attitude to Alcoholics Anonymous. Oh, yeah, why? Why? Why was I willing to get sober? I had a kid. I loved this kid. I felt a connection to another human being for perhaps the first time in my entire life. I loved her. She mattered to me. And the last blackout I had that she was around her, I said some unspeakable things to her. Things that you just can't take back, right? I was unable to be the man that she needed me to be. And so I had a couple options. Take myself out, which, that's extreme. That is drastic. You know, I'm not much, but I'm all I care about. Or come back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And really try Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was a real thought, because I knew the entire time I had been here, I was hedging my bets, right? I really wasn't buying in to the Kool-Aid of Alcoholics Anonymous, right? I wasn't. I just wasn't drinking it, you know? But my daughter was a sufficient reason for me to be willing to drink your Kool-Aid no matter what was in it, right? I was just going to come back. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know if I can actually do this or not. But the only place I've ever not drank in my entire life is Alcoholics Anonymous. And maybe if I actually try and do what these people think, even though I think kind of really in the back of my mind, I can't actually do what you people do. I think I may be broken in a way that you're not actually broken and that this won't work for me. I think I might just be worse than you. Right? I come back and I try. Right? I try to the best of my ability. And for the first 2 years of my sobriety, what that looked like almost every day was me calling my sponsor at noon, telling him how messed up things were that day, and him saying, "Who'd you help today?" "Nobody, Mike. Thank you." You know, I mean, I am at work. You know, some of us have to go to work. I'm at work. And help anybody today. I got this problem, man. You know. He's like, "Why don't you go help somebody and call me back?" So our conversations were very short for a couple of years. Because I wasn't helping anybody. I wouldn't help anybody. I wouldn't talk to anybody. I didn't have anything to help anybody with. I can't even do service at the meeting, right? You serve stuff? I don't need a service position. You know, but I'm at the meeting. And somewhere around, I don't know how I stayed sober. It really, I am convinced, based on my own experience, the experience of some friends of mine, that God is merciful. Extremely merciful. The notion that if you are seeking, God's not going to make the terms hard is obvious. Because I did almost nothing except talk trash in Alcoholics Anonymous for the first 2 years. I mean, it was bad. People would call my sponsor and say, "Can't you do something about him?" Right? I was unwelcome. My grand sponsor called me. Is it okay if I swear? Not really. Okay. Okay. Well, so he called me the arms bearer for the sad butts, only he didn't use butts, right? I mean, I really was just miserable, and I tried to make everybody around me miserable for like 2 years, you know. And then I had this notion, and don't let me mislead you. I mean, the truth is I was taking the steps. I was taking them poorly, but I was taking them. The steps where you actually had to do something, I was taking. Two and three were speed bumps. You know, whatever. Yeah, sure, that's true. Absolutely. Yep, God, you got it. Hallelujah. But I wrote an inventory. I have gone back and read it. It was just awful. It was really bad. I don't know how. You know, but it was the best I could do at the time. I wrote the inventory. And my sponsor, wise man that he is, he didn't allow me to make direct amends to anybody. But he said I could start paying back the people I owed money. So I started paying people back, right? Six and seven, again, were speed bumps. I didn't know what they meant. It really didn't matter to me. So I was doing a little bit of work to stay in Alcoholics Anonymous. And the truth is, I probably had a couple of enforced service positions, you know. My sponsor would say, "Well, I'm going to this meeting. You be at my house at this time." And I would go with him because I don't know why. Because I would. Because I really didn't want to drink anymore. And we'd go to the meeting, and we'd set up the meeting, and then we'd go eat. You know what I mean? But I was really very miserable. And around about 2 years of sobriety, this notion hit me that if I did not start bringing everything to Alcoholics Anonymous and sharing it all with Alcoholics Anonymous, whatever it was, that I wasn't going to be able to stay for very much longer. So I started sharing in meetings, and I would share my bad attitude. You know what I mean? I would share how I thought this wasn't going to work for me. I would share how I can't have a relationship with God. You don't understand. Not only did I do all these things, I liked every single one of them that I did, and I want to do them right now. I enjoy the pain that I inflict in the world, and I laugh when you fall down. There is no way that your God will have me, right? You know, and then people started talking to me about a God personal to me, you know? It was kind of interesting. Never really thought about it before. And I didn't think about much at the time. And I was dating this girl. She really liked abusive men. So she picked me, and I was dating her. But I was less abusive than her last one, so it was a step up, right? It was a step up, for sure. And her family was good family, very nice people, very normal people, religious people. They were good Baptist folk. And she, like, had me over to some family affair, which was a real mistake, right? Yeah, I told her dad how much I was like Jesus, and it was just awful. So bad, right? But, you know, they're good people, so they didn't throw me out. And her aunt, actually, a couple of weeks later, gave me this book. Very nice lady, very caring lady, really wants to help people. This book called Mere Christianity. Now, she didn't know it at the time, but I was a fan of C.S. Lewis. I liked this guy. Because this guy could argue. You know what I mean? He was into logic arguments. He was into telling people that they were wrong. I was into telling people that they were wrong. He and I were kind of like on the same wavelength. So I had some respect for this guy. Had no idea he'd ever written anything religious. I'd just read his essays about how stupid other people were. Right? And so she gives me this book that he wrote. So already one intellectual barrier is gone, right? She like, and she didn't do it on purpose. She didn't know. You know what I mean? And I'm sure she's got hundreds of other great religious books at her house. But she gave me that one, right? I mean, you couldn't do that on a bad bet, right? There is no way. If there is no God, I don't get that book, period. I don't get that book, ever. I'm not looking for it. Somebody else is looking for it. We're certainly not talking about C.S. Lewis because I don't talk about that. You know what I mean? There's no way this would have happened. So this woman gives me this book. I'm at work. I work in the construction field. I do structural consulting, and we're down in this garage in the middle of the night, and there's like, you know, 18, 20 guys running jackhammers on the concrete. And I'm reading this book because I'm a consultant. I'm not a worker. So I'm reading the book, and I get about halfway through this book, and the icy intellectual mountain, that's so awful, the icy intellectual mountain melts, right? I mean, the last real defense that I had intellectually of having a relationship against God disappeared as I was reading this book. And in that garage in the middle of the night reading this book, I started to cry because I was in the presence of my Creator. Right? I mean, for the skeptics, let me be honest with you. I have no idea if it was some biochemical nonsense or not. I really don't know. And I'll tell you the truth, I really don't care. But I believe, good enough for me, that I was in the presence of my Creator. I felt in that moment whole and loved. I knew that there wasn't anything that I had ever done nor anything that I could ever do that would make my Creator stop loving me. Nothing, right? And that was really when I started to turn into Alcoholics Anonymous. I think I had been too afraid, too embarrassed, too ashamed, too skeptical, too I don't know what, too something. But I just couldn't do it, you know? And having had that experience, I started showing up and being honest. Now, I do not believe that that experience is the same as the spiritual awakening that comes from the practice of the 12 steps. Not at all. I believe I had a spiritual experience. I believe it was absolutely necessary for me to have one to continue on with the program. And I believe that is why I had one. It's because it was necessary for me. And God is merciful, right? But it is not the spiritual awakening that our book talks about. I thought it might have been. I thought it might have been. Because, you know, God, first experience, overwhelming, very intense. I'm super happy now. I'm excited about life. I've got this thing, you know, and come to find out that I don't, right? But I had enough willingness that I could begin to surrender to Alcoholics Anonymous. I could begin to do more than just comply. I could begin to do more than just wear Alcoholics Anonymous like a straitjacket or a set of bookends. Right? It was really, for me, I like to talk about it as it became like an easy chair. Alcoholics Anonymous started to pick me up and carry me along because I let it. I started to surrender. You know what I mean? And I got involved more in service, and a couple of years later on, I started sponsoring some people. You know what I mean? That was kind of an experience. It was after I started sponsoring people around 5 years of sobriety that I got intimately acquainted with six and seven. You know, it was still very incremental for me. I'm a slow learner, right? I was a controlling sponsor, I'll be honest with you. I was a controlling sponsor, you know. You would call me up, tell me what you were doing. I would tell you what you were doing wrong and tell you what you should be doing right. I am surprised any of them survived, but a couple of them did. I've made amends to them. But somewhere after I started sponsoring people, maybe a year after I started sponsoring people, I had this notion that my selfishness was going to kill me sober. I was never, ever going to have to take a drink. I was just going to die from my own selfishness, right? And I started to become aware of this whole new aspect of Alcoholics Anonymous and growth, right? And caring for other people, right? So I had this incredible transformation that allowed me to actually surrender to Alcoholics Anonymous. And then a little later on, after I had started trying to look out for other people deliberately, on purpose, to the best of my ability, as I told you, it was not very good. But after I did that, I had this other transformation. I had a change of heart. And I started to love the people that I was sponsoring. I started to actually care for them and care about their welfare. And the more that I cared about them, the brighter life got, the more joy there was in my life. I don't know. It's hard to describe. I mean, if you've had the experience, you'll know it, and I don't have to tell you about it. And if you haven't, I don't think I can explain it to you. But it goes back to something I was saying at the beginning. I did not want your self-sacrifice. Get it off me. I'm going to grab everything that I can from life. And in the very first chapter of our book, where I guess we can breeze right by it and never see it, it says very clearly, if the alcoholic fails to grow and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice with others, he will be unable to face the certain trials that come, right? So that's also growing through joy instead of pain, right? Up until this point, I believe that almost everything I had done in Alcoholics Anonymous was growing through pain. When I actively became involved in self-sacrifice, right, the thing that I really didn't want to do, when it wasn't about, I'm going to answer the phone when it's convenient for me to answer a phone. I'm going to talk to you when it's convenient for me to talk to you. I will give you help on my terms and in no other way. Right? Because that's the way I was. You know. That's the way I thought my sponsor was. Really. I thought he was that way. I thought he was very angry and mean. I thought we always had to do things his way just because he was a jerk. I didn't know. I didn't know that doing things some other way was going to get me killed, and he was just trying to love me. I didn't know. I thought he was just controlling and demanding. And so that's the way I was with the people that I sponsored. Come to find out, my sponsor actually loved me. And I had no experience with that and no understanding of that. And I become loving of the people that I sponsor. And the promises have come true in my life. Clearly, I'm not perfect because I was a half hour late to be here, right? But I can't. You know, usually, I'm better with words than this. My life is beyond anything I thought it ever could have been, right? My life is more than I ever wanted it to be. And none of my life is about getting mine. It's not about getting mine. I mean, I've got a job, and I go to work, and I do my job. But it's secondary, right? I have things that I have hobbies that I like to engage in. I have recreational things that I like to do, but they're secondary, right? My life today centers in Alcoholics Anonymous, right? And that doesn't mean that I'm always at the meeting, or I'm always on the phone with the people I sponsor, or I'm always meditating and praying, right? Because I'm not. But what it means is that not only am I not the center of the universe, I'm not the center of my own life, right? It's not mine. It's not all about me. I'm not trying to get mine. I'm not trying to get sober and live my dreams, right? Because I abandoned myself to God in the third step. Abandon is a strong word, but that is the word that the book uses. It uses the word abandoned, right? And not in the third step specifically. It's in How It Works, read it. It says abandon. And abandon is like where you have a baby that you don't want, and you take it to the church or the firehouse, and you put it in the basket with the note that says, please don't let Junior die. And you drive away, and you never come back. That's abandon, right? And so I abandoned myself to God. I took, to the best of my ability, I take everything that I am, and I leave it on God's steps, and I do not worry about what happens to me, or what you think of me, or what I look like, or any of the stuff that was my entire world 20 years ago. Right? It was my entire world. So everything I knew growing up was my image, my feelings, my thoughts, getting mine. Right? And I take all of that and I leave it with God and I absolutely don't worry about it. And I get up in the morning and I try and do whatever it is I'm supposed to be doing. Sometimes I'm late. But I try and do whatever it is I'm supposed to be doing. Right? So if I'm supposed to go to work that day, I will get in the car and I will head towards where it is I'm supposed to be. I have no idea whether or not I'm going to get there because this is not my world. This is God's world. And maybe something different's going to happen. I don't know. Most days it doesn't. Most days I just go to work and I do my job and it's very boring. But some days something else happens. And because I'm not driving down the road thinking about me, thinking about getting mine, making sure I get my paycheck so that I can get my house and my car so I can keep my wife and my things, I am aware that something else has just happened. And I am able to show up and participate in other people's lives, right? And the thing that I hate and the thing that I fear, other people, right? The thing that wasn't even real to me, has become my salvation. Other people are really where it's at. It's kind of ridiculous. I thought I was where it's at, but the truth is, it's you guys. You guys are where it's at. I find joy. A word that I could not have. I was sitting in a meeting about 3 years sober. I was sitting next to my grand sponsor. The topic of the meeting was joy. I leaned over to my grand sponsor. He'd been sober 20 years, something like that. I leaned over to him and I said, why are we sitting here blowing all this smoke and sunshine up each other's bottoms? I didn't use the word bottoms. Why are we doing that? There's no such thing. And he looked at me and he said, shut up. Had a good grand sponsor. He knew how to treat me. You know, but I mean, that's the truth, right? I had no frame of reference for joy ever in my life, right? None. And it wasn't until after I did the work. It wasn't until after I took the actions. And I don't believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is a fake it till you make it program. I absolutely do not. I believe that Alcoholics Anonymous is an act as if program. And you might be going, well, Aaron, that sounds like it's quite the same thing. No, it's not. It's not at all. Let me explain it to you. Fake it till you make it is, I'm going to pretend like I don't hate you and I'm not terrified of you and I'm just going to act like I care about you and hope that it's all okay. Act As If program is, I'm going to tell my sponsor and everybody who asks, and probably you if you question me about it, that I am afraid of people and I don't like people. It's really difficult for me to be with people. And I am going to try to the best of my ability to stand next to you and talk to you anyway. But I'm going to be honest with you while I do it. I'm going to let you see all of me while I do it. And that's acting as if, right? I mean, that's what we do with 6 and 7. I don't work on my defects. I don't work on my defects. I mean, that's cute if you do, but I don't. What I do is I give my defects to God, and then I change some of my behaviors. And the behaviors I change, interestingly enough, are not the ones I pick. They're the ones that my sponsor picks. Now, he picks them because I call him up and I give him my inventory. I say, hey, Mike, this is what I did today. This is what went on. This is how people treated me. This is how they reacted. And he says, well, Aaron, maybe next time you're in that situation, you could do this. And I go, oh. And next time that comes up, I don't do it. I call him. I tell him about it. And he says, Aaron, you remember we talked about this thing. And I say, oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I'll try it again, Mike. Because I never get it right the first time. I never do. I never do. And God has never punished me for not getting it right the first time. Not even once. You know, and so I get these new behaviors in my life that teach me how to get along with people better. This is going to be hard. I mean, you don't know me, so it's not going to be a surprise to you, but it's still a surprise to me. I've had the same job for 12 years. I have been married to the same woman for almost 14 years. Our anniversary is this month. Yes, almost 14 years I've been married to the same woman, right? I mean, these are things. I own a house. So we just refinanced. My wife is now on the house, too. So we own a house. We own a house. But, like, I've been paying a mortgage on that house for years. Those people have no idea that there's anything wrong with me, right? And it's astounding because the truth is, Aaron is not only incapable of not taking a drink, Aaron is not capable of holding a job. Aaron is not capable of having a relationship for, you know, more than a couple of weeks. Aaron is certainly not capable of paying the bills on time. I'll be honest with you, they're not always on time, right? I always have the money in the bank, which is new. I always have the money in the bank, but sometimes I'm still so lazy that I forget to write the check, and then I got to pay a late fee. But as soon as they call me and they say, hey, you know, you didn't send us your money, I send them their money, you know, so I'm not dodging anybody. I don't defend my mistakes. I make plenty of them, but I don't defend them. I don't try and act like they're not there. I try and own them, you know, and because I believe, this is my experience as well, if I deny something, I'm going to keep it forever. But if I accept it and I own it and I embrace it, like my defects, then maybe there's enough freedom and enough release. See, because if I'm denying something, I'm fighting with it. I'm holding it. I'm struggling with it. But if I embrace something, I've let it go. You know what I mean? We're just hugging it. We're just cradling it. We're just carrying it around. It's just here. And that's why I think God can do something with it, right? It's because I've let go. My God has never been... That's an offensive word. Intrusive is another word. I have a vocabulary. My God has never been intrusive in my life. My God has always waited for me, right? Which is, I think, why I didn't have a relationship with God for so very long. It's because I didn't really want one. I wanted to be God. Me. I thought I was, really, for a while. I did a lot of drugs. A lot of drugs. I thought I was, you know. But I firmly believe that the reason why I had no relationship with God was because I didn't want one. And as soon as I wanted one and was willing to have one, I had one, right? And as long as I am working on a problem, I'm going to work it out. I got this. I'm going to handle it. It's cool. I'm taking care of it. God's not going to mess with it, right? But as soon as I let go of whatever it is, then God does something about it, right? Which generally to me, this is so weird, generally to me looks like nothing. It generally looks like nothing. Most of my problems actually just disappear when I don't do anything about them. there's no real resolution. Nothing really changes or happens or anything. They just go away, right? And I don't mean like money I got to pay back. Money you got to pay back is money you got to pay back, right? Broken relationships are relationships you got to mend. We all got to make our amends, right? But if I let go and allow God to take over, it seems like whatever it is I think is so important or so necessary, 95% of the time just doesn't happen. Doesn't need to happen. Nothing. Right? I got like 5 more minutes. So I'm going to try and do 5 more minutes. It's been an awkward day. I can't even tell you how uncomfortable I got when I got your call. Like, it really got in my head. It really did. There are plenty of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who talk about loving Alcoholics Anonymous. I am not one of them because I refuse to do that. If you watch what I do, you'll probably believe I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I just won't say it, right? I'm not ready yet. 14 years, I'm not ready yet. That's all. I'm just not ready yet. I'm sure I will at some point because my actions prove it, right? My actions prove I love Alcoholics Anonymous. And what I do here matters to me. And the commitments that I make here matter to me. And wow. And it doesn't matter. I know it doesn't matter. I know, like, you've had plenty of meetings without me, and if I wasn't going to be here tonight, you'd have had a meeting anyway. You know what I mean? I know that. But it's that I didn't do what I said I was going to do. It really messed with me, really threw me off my game. This was not at all the talk I was planning on giving. I'm sorry. I had a much better one planned. You would have been very impressed. I sounded so spiritual. And maybe that's why I had to be late, so you could throw me off my talk, so that I could tell you the truth instead of what I wanted you to hear. So I've been talking a lot with people that I sponsor recently about amends. And we've been back and forth and about some stuff. We've been talking about 2 big things recently. I'll see. We'll get to amends, and then we'll see if we get to the other one. So in my experience, the 8th step, horribly abusive document, very, very thorough. I do not believe that there was a single person on this planet who ever met me before I got into Alcoholics Anonymous and was sober for a few years that would not have been better off if they had not met me. Right. I believe that is absolutely true. They go on my 8 step list. For me, I did not go out and start making amends to everybody I had ever met. I mean, the truth is my impact on their life was negligible, probably. If they were healthy people, they had a relationship with God, had a relationship with community, somewhat stable and well-balanced, whatever interaction they had with me was a bump in the road. It was 5 minutes of their life they'd never going to get back, but they were fine. Right? But me, I was not fine. Right? I treated everybody that I met horribly. Right? Now, my amends is to practice the principles in all my affairs. Right? And try and treat everybody that I meet with courtesy. Right? That's how I make amends for that. But they had to go on the 8th step. So in the 9th step, right, we get in this struggle about, well, you know, I'm doing it for them. I'm doing it. I got to make, you know, and all this stuff. And our book says this thing, right? Our real purpose here is to fit ourselves to be a maximum service to God and those about us. So that means 2 things. First, it means that all of the garbage that I carry around inside me for the horrible things that I did to you has to go away. It has to. And the only way that we can get rid of that garbage, get rid of that stuff that blocks us from the rest of the world, I like to think about it like a house, right? And being a collector, right? Or a whatever they call them.
Hoarder.
There you go. Being a hoarder, right? And every time I hurt somebody else, I put a new box in my house. Because let me assure you, not only do I remember every negative thing you've done to me, I remember every negative thing I've done to you. I remember. I didn't forget. That's half the reason why I drank. I liked it, but I remember it, and I feel bad about it. It's a very strange combination. So every time I hurt somebody, I put a box in my house, and pretty soon all the windows are blocked and all the doors are blocked and there's not much air and there's not much room in there. And the truth is, I'm not going to invite you into my house when it looks like that. Not going to let you in. Not God, not a person, nobody. I'm not going to let you in. And so I have to start taking these things, which in large measure are damages I have done to other people, and emptying them out of my house. And the only way I can do that is to go to you, owe you an apology, give it to you. If I owe you money, pay it back to you. If I owe you time, give it to you. You know what I mean? That's the only way I can clean that stuff out, so that I can be free to do whatever it is that God needs me to do. The other half of that is that I also need to be free to go wherever God needs me to go. And so if there are people whom I have harmed, which are actually unhappy with me still, right? Part of this is for them, sort of, kind of, to try and placate them, so that maybe, if I have to, I can go there and be of service to God, right, without them being mad at me and getting in the way, right? But really, even the ninth step, for me, I could be wrong, this is just the way I read it now, is all about me and God, right? Still, it's absolutely paying back what I owe, but it's so that I am free to give even more. Because if I have that stuff inside me, I can't give. I just can't. The other thing we've been talking about recently, I got two more minutes on my end, unless you want me to stop now. Okay. The other thing we've been talking about a lot recently is outside issues. And with the controversy, right? I don't believe in outside issues. I think it is confusing. I am a person who did a lot of stuff on their way to Alcoholics Anonymous besides drinking. I did a lot of drugs. I did a lot of sex. I did a lot of gambling. I did a lot of money and women and cars. I did a tremendous amount of stuff to get here. All of those things are a part of my story. They are not a part of my alcoholism. They are not, however, outside issues. If they were an outside issue, I could smoke pot and be sober. That's not an outside issue, right? Whether I'm a Republican or Democrat is probably an outside issue. But the problem is this. Smoking pot blocks me from a relationship with God. I have to have a relationship with God to be sober. Therefore, it cannot be an outside issue. And my alcoholism is my alcoholism. It's unique. You heard me qualify as an alcoholic at the beginning. I am an alcoholic. The truth of the matter is, if I'm a drug addict and you take the drugs out of me for long enough, I'm not an addict anymore, right? If you've got a problem other than alcohol, please go take care of it. But don't think just because maybe there's some sort of outside issue, right, in your life, that you couldn't possibly be an alcoholic. I smoke more pot than I ever drank, right? That's just the way it is. It's not something I'm proud of. I don't wear it as a badge. But we've been talking about it a lot recently because people are leaving and dying because they're thinking, well, if I did drugs, I can't be an alcoholic or I can't be here, right? And so while I absolutely believe in the purity of the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I hope that I tried to carry a message tonight about alcoholism, I also just want to say, let's be gentle with people on the way in the door. You know what I mean? There is room in here for everybody who needs to be here, regardless of why they got here. Whether it was the courts or some heroin, alcoholism doesn't discriminate, right? And just because you did some drugs or you gambled too much doesn't mean you can't have alcoholism too. And I would venture to say, based on working with some people, if you don't treat your alcoholism first, those other problems are never going to get better. So I really do appreciate you guys listening. Thank you so much for your patience. Thank you for letting me.